I didn't know how sleep deprived I would be when I became a parent. Like, I thought I knew, but I didn't know.
Yeah, hard to know. Kind of impossible to prepare for, unless we talk about it a little more. That's why we asked for your stories about sleep deprivation.
I've had an eye twitch for about 2 weeks now.
At some point, cocaine was introduced into the mix, and boy, that was just what I needed for sleep deprivation.
We'd be like these two zombies rolling through the dark apartment.
Just last night, I got slapped in the face at 3:45 in the morning by a half-sleeping toddler who joined our bed, and I was then awake for most of the night. Fun times.
I mean, of course we know interrupted sleep comes with the job of raising kids, especially babies. We expect that. But it's impossible to know what it will feel like, how we will experience it, physically and emotionally, until we're in it.
My daughter was awake, just crying so loud. I was doing everything I knew, you know, bouncing her, shushing her, just trying everything to get her to sleep again. I was so tired. She was so tired. All I wanted was for her to be quiet. And yeah, I felt just rage coursing through my body.
I recognize that feeling. Those early days with your baby where you're unraveling a little because of the lack of sleep. Both of my babies had colic. And I just remember sitting on one of those large exercise balls, bouncing up and down with my baby in my arms for hours each day. Of course, that phase lasted for about a month, one little month. Then it just shifts into other phases. For a lot of parents, the lack of sleep can stretch on for a year or two or more, even well into the teenage years. And it doesn't seem like there's a long game for that.
We're coming up on year 7 now, and sleep is still a thing that doesn't happen consistently in our house.
You know, I have an Apple Watch, and it keeps track of how much I sleep or don't. And, you know, in a month, I get one night, maybe two, where I get more than 7 hours of sleep. I don't know how other parents do it.
Yeah, neither do I. I don't think we own up to just how much our lack of sleep can grind us down and alter how we operate out in the world. For me, I think about how I have a really hard time being a good parent when I'm underslept, or being me at all. I get the sense that we've all decided we're supposed to take it as a given and just deal indefinitely. If that's the case, can we at least acknowledge that we are muscling through and share how? Because even if things feel really rough, we seem to be pulling from reserves that maybe we didn't even know we had. Pretty cool. From 10% Happier, this is Childproof, a parenting show about parents. I'm Yasmin Khan. Today, we're talking all things sleep and survival. That's coming up after the break.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores, like Urban Outfitters, Fenty Beauty, and Expedia. And even stack sales on top of cash back. It's easy to use, and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Welcome back. To even begin exploring issues around sleep, we, well, really wanted to explore all the way to Norway. Can you just paint a picture of what Svalbard is like?
I mean, it is amazing to live there because of the nature. Nature is really close to you.
I connected with a mother named Moa Maria Caro, who lives in Svalbard, Norway. It's way up in the Arctic. She's a mom to three, including a newborn, a boy now about 6 weeks old. Moa loves living in this remote part of the world. Just a 10-minute walk out of town, and it's like she's in an episode of Planet Earth. It's just this immense mountainous landscape, lakes, water with blues of every shade, and whatever animals you encounter.
You know, like reindeers and polar foxes and a lot of birds in the summer. And yeah, of course, you can see a polar bear as well, but that's not that common though.
It's a place, she says, where tourists cry when confronting the Arctic silence and the stars at night. It's beautiful. But to live in Svalbard is to live in extremes of light and of dark. This part of the world experiences about 3 months of constant sunlight in summer, then in the winter, total darkness. And it can be difficult to adjust to.
I actually had nightmares about it, that it's dark and it's so long until the sun is coming.
For Moa, the polar nights were the hardest, the 2.5 months of pitch darkness. She says these are the times that your body just wants to sleep, regardless of what life demands.
Your whole body is like, it's night, you know, what are you doing? You know, and it's hard in the modern society because you still have to like produce and be productive and blah, blah, blah. But you also have to think like, yes, I live in the high Arctic and it's dark all the time and we get tired. So then I think it's important to just slow down and listen to your body.
She's had to adapt to things that she doesn't have control over, the sun, or lack of it, for instance. So she's pushed to pay extra close attention to her body, to thinking about what she needs to get through. Moa has obvious signposts to follow for this. It's like nature is waving its arms, flagging her down to stop and listen to herself. She's forced to at least acknowledge that her body needs something different.
I think actually our bodies are adjusting all the time. And all these changes and all this light coming and going, being so close to nature, it's just, yeah, it makes it worth it.
Nature makes it worth it, she says, to live in Svalbard and its extremes of light and dark, and of the ways she has to be in tune with her sleep and with being awake. Moa has the magic of polar foxes and northern lights to prompt her to listen to her body and adjust to her environment. But what about the rest of us? What are the signs we can look for to listen to our needs when we feel pulled by extremes, sometimes of our own making, like the blue lights of our phones, or the extremes that aren't, like a child who needs us in the middle of the night? Do people corner you all the time to talk about this? Like when they find out that you're a sleep scientist, do they pepper you with like a million questions?
I think it depends. I wish my family asked me more.
Really?
They're sick of hearing about how much sleep they should get. They kind of avoid it.
I called up Dr. Lauren Whitehurst. She's a cognitive neuroscientist who specializes in sleep.
When I think about all of the many ways that sleep impacts our bodies and protects our bodies and helps us maintain a healthy body, I think about what does it mean when people are not getting sleep? Not because of a personal choice, but because the systems around them that impact them keep them from having good access to healthy sleep.
Lauren's not a parent. We wanted to talk to her because of her research and her focus on sleep equity. She looks at the conditions a person has for getting enough sleep and the control they have over those conditions. So let's say you have a job that requires you to start your workday at 3 a.m. Are you able to shift your schedule so you can get to sleep earlier or take a nap? Or maybe you don't have childcare then to get the sleep you need. Lauren's research looks at the long-term and short-term effects of lack of sleep. We started our conversation getting some basics down, like what is happening to us when we're not getting enough sleep.
Let's first start at that kind of physiological level or biological level, what happens in the body. So our cells are regulated by sleep, particularly our immune response. So when we don't get enough sleep, our cells actually think that we are sick. It's a stressor to them. It tells them to send out an inflammatory response to say, hey, there's something going on here. You need to bring your body back down. We can't just be awake all the time. And so it sends a signal saying that you're sick. And if we don't get that sleep, it has no way to correct that signal. That can happen just after some, you know, acute deprivation. Chronically, that can really build up, and that can lead to some degradation in the body and in the brain that can lead to chronic illness. And I'm not saying zero nights of sleep. I'm saying, you know, not enough for your body over time.
Yeah. And just for context, what, I mean, I know every person is probably different, but what is enough sleep?
Oh man, that's the hardest question to answer because it's really personal.
Yeah.
A lot of the messaging about sleep is like, oh, make sure you get your 8 hours. And what I find is that I talk to my friends and my family and they're like, I don't need 8 hours. I feel good after 6.5, or I actually need 9. Like I try to wake up after 8 and I'm still really sleepy. It's just like, how much food do you need to eat? That varies for every person. It should be yours. It should be your own.
Right. That makes sense. Okay. So back to the degradation of our bodies.
Yeah, I know, right? So much time. And so when we don't get enough sleep, that's what's happening. Our bodies think we're sick. And that sick signal can influence a lot of other body systems. So it can influence our cardiovascular system, our metabolic system. It interacts with things like insulin. So that's kind of what happens in the long term if you're not receiving a lot of sleep.
But for parents who are in a particularly bad phase with sleep, Lauren says there's good news.
Our bodies are also resilient in a really important way. And that acute moment of sleep deprivation, 1 or 2 nights when you're not getting enough sleep and you're not feeling rested, our bodies can make that up. You're not going down the pathway of high blood pressure because you didn't get enough sleep for 2 nights, right? Like your body is quite resilient. We can be okay for a little while and then try to make up that sleep later. I often tell people, well, you know, if you didn't get enough sleep and you have some time to take a nap, well, then take a nap, you know? It will help your body kind of replenish itself, restore itself. You don't have to be so worried about a bad night of sleep. Our bodies, not so much that they adapt to sleep deprivation. That's not kind of what's happening. But we maximize when we are asleep. So one thing that happens when we fall asleep, our bodies crave this particular stage of sleep called slow wave sleep. And during this time, our brains really kind of slow down and our immune system starts to repair itself. Our cardiovascular system slows down and tries to repair itself. And our bodies will get that stage of sleep as soon as it can. It will rush to get that sleep first. And so a lot of that maintenance and repair that we need happens for the first couple of hours of that sleep. I say that with the caveat, like when you can and when it's available, get as much as you can and your body will be better for it.
But I basically am hearing you say, thinking from a very selfish standpoint, that if you have been getting not enough sleep for several years, you are not totally screwed. For, like, in terms of your health?
I mean, I will say that you're as screwed as every other parent has ever existed. So what I will say is that there's also exacerbating factors that makes that sleeplessness worse. So, you know, if you don't feel supported as a parent, if you don't feel like you have a strong community, if you have really high stress levels that are being exacerbated by like your sleeplessness. So those are the kind of things that maybe we can think about supporting and changing, because of the sleep part early in the parenting process and even throughout the lifespan, you can't change as much. But trying to buffer and support might also be a way to do that too.
It's reassuring that our bodies will make do with what they can get, at least in the short term. Obviously, our biological and physical systems need sleep to reset. But our brains are doing all sorts of sneaky repair work too, and tidying up.
One really vital thing that occurs during sleep is our ability to consolidate the learning that we do throughout the day. When we learn new information, our neurons, or the cells in our brain, take that information and try to put it away so that later when you need it, you can find it. During sleep, that ability to consolidate your memory or put it away so that you can use it later is optimized. The brain state during sleep is one of the perfect states for that to happen. And so we think one of the reasons why we sleep at all is because we need to consolidate the learning that we do. And so if we don't get enough sleep, our memories suffer. We don't put them away. We are not as adaptive to our environments. And when you think about that, that sounds, you know, super academic, but when you put that into kind of what that means, you're learning about so much in your environment. You're learning about how to be a good parent. You're learning about how to be a good friend. You're learning about what this person's cues are to tell you that they need you, or what this person does when they feel good, what you do that makes other people feel good, right? So you can imagine that it's not just memory for facts or information. It's also memory about, you know, how to interact with people.
So Lauren says we need sleep for those social interactions and to do them well, especially when it comes to handling our own emotions.
And this is the thing that I think resonates with people the most. The feeling of like, hey, when I don't get enough sleep, like the smallest thing can like push me over, you know, or I feel much more overwhelmed by things that typically would not be overwhelmed by. Like, you know, yesterday my kid cried about this and it was fine. And today my kid cried about the same thing and it was not fine.
Yes.
You know, right? So the emotion regulation that happens during sleep in our bodies, the ability to kind of tone down things that are really negatively charged and store away things that have these positive associations. One thing that we find that when we don't get enough sleep, we actually remember more negative stuff and we don't remember as much positive things.
Why? Yes. Why would that be?
Yeah. The early systems that have adapted in our body are kind of these stress trigger systems, right? These systems that say, hey, you're safe or you're unsafe. Being unsafe is super important for our body to know. And so when we're well slept, our more developed, rational, logical brain that tells you how to interpret those cues. Well, hey, I feel a little bit weird, but why do I feel weird? What's going on with me? Like that rational stuff that can come in and really analyze that information. That part starts to decline when you're sleep deprived. Sleep seems to be so important for the kind of more complex understanding of the world.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I'm thinking about our functionality.
Yeah.
And it's like spelling out the obvious, but I feel the world expects us to show up and function no matter what. And I remember when my kid, my second kid was a newborn, and I didn't trust myself to cross the street against the light. Even if there was nobody coming,
yeah.
Like I have a very specific memory being like, I'm just going to wait until it says walk because I don't trust that I don't see a car coming.
That is such a good example of that. Such a good example of like, I need to just go back. I'm not going to do this complex analysis of, hey, is there a car coming? Where is the car? How far is it away? Like, nope, just walk when it tells me to walk. Look for the cue that says this is now safe.
I guess it's complex analysis. It goes to show how these basic ways of going about our day are easy to take for granted until we feel like we've lost the ability to function properly. And when that happens, we also don't feel like ourselves. And I don't have to convince you. You told us what it feels like.
My brain and ability to think clearly is one of the best things I have going for me. And to not have a functioning brain for a whole year just felt like a huge handicap that robbed me of who I am and who I was.
I feel tired and like a zombie at work a lot of days. And then I think the sort of flip side of that is a lot of nights my daughter might be asleep and I worry about my job and I feel anxious about not doing as well as I feel like I could.
You also told us it's easy to want to defeat tiredness, but with time, it's possible to accept the reality of it.
Our sleep has been so damaged, it feels like it will take ages to come back to normal. So I guess it's a matter of living with it and taking in the bright and joyful energy we can get from our happy toddler.
It's not so much sleep deprivation as it is becoming someone I am not and loving it. My whole life I have never enjoyed making breakfast. And the last thing I want to do when I wake up is to create more dishes. But for some reason, when he wakes up in the morning, I'm happy to make him a full breakfast with many options. And as exhausted as I may be, I find joy in that.
Coming up, we hear from more parents on how a lack of sleep affects their lives. And Lauren Whitehurst talks us through what we need to enable good rest. That's after the break.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
When you choose Organic Valley, not only will you be enjoying great-tasting dairy, you'll help to save over 1,600 small organic family farms who are protecting over 400,000 acres of organic farmland and all the plants and animals that call it home. This is dairy you can feel good about. It's great tasting, high quality organic dairy, ethically sourced from small organic family farms. To find Organic Valley Dairy near you, visit ov.coop. That's ov.coop.
Welcome back. We got a lot of insightful and honest voice memos from listeners about how they've struggled with lack of sleep as parents. We're sharing many of those throughout the episode. One email from a working parent hit me in the pit of my stomach because I feel like I share some of the same anger it expressed, or maybe it's bewilderment, that dealing with extreme exhaustion is the way it's supposed to be for parents. This listener wanted to remain anonymous, but here's what the email said. Sleep deprivation has been the most traumatic aspect of parenthood for me, particularly because we are a household with two parents working full-time. I felt resentful that people I had sought advice from when pregnant had not prepared me for how miserable the sleep deprivation would be. I felt like I was duped and therefore not adequately prepared. My children have been sleeping through the night now for 2 years, but I still look back at that time with disbelief and almost a sense of moral injury that we live in a society that expected my husband and I to do the impossible. Lauren Whitehurst, the sleep scientist we've been talking with, thinks a lot about the systems that enable good rest for some of us and the systems that fail many of us and prevent sleep. We asked Lauren more about what she calls sleep equity and about how our society just doesn't prioritize sleep or find ways to support it.
There's so much that influences our sleep and the idea of access to good sleep. And so parenting, I think, is a very interesting way to think about that, because there is a quality of parenting that's not going to change. You have a child that requires and needs and is reliant on a well-functioning older adult to care for it. And that is just the condition. That's not this well-functioning older adult's fault. Right? Like, there's not, like, they can't in any way, shape, or form change that condition. That is the condition of being a parent. And our society does not make that easy.
Yeah.
Our society also puts all of these other requirements on that well-functioning older adult. You have to have a job so that you can feed this child. There's so many pressures so that sleep can't be a focus or a priority.
Yeah.
And that's not that person's fault. That's a choice that our society has decided. We as a society have decided that that person's health does not matter. And so I think that parenting is a really good example of, well, yeah, there might be some individual choices that could be made to make your sleep better, but there's also a lack of institutional support and systemic support that allows parents to make better choices for their health.
In the academic world of sleep science and neuroscience, where are the conversations around lack of sleep and parenting happening? I feel like we talk about adolescence a lot, or I hear about it more, and we think in general about adults. Is it happening related to parenthood?
I think it's starting to. You know, for so long in our society, women traditionally did caregiving work and traditionally did rearing of children. And so I think a lot of these issues that were thought of or understood as problems that women face were not centered in scientific inquiry. So the idea of caregiving for a child or for any other type of caregiving is making a huge appearance in our current understanding of the science and health and equity questions. So I think the work is new. It's emerging. It's starting to happen. At least we're starting to have conversations about it, but not enough.
There are complex discussions that need to happen about how to foster the conditions for us all to get the sleep we need. And clearly, more of those conversations need to happen as they relate to parents. It's not an individual problem, but I still wanted to ask Lauren, what can we each do to set ourselves up for more meaningful rest?
As a person, there are things that we can do. And the first thing I always say is to get rid of the guilt around sleeping.
What do you mean by that? That you actually are going to say, I need to go to sleep now?
Yes. So give yourself full permission to experience your tiredness, to understand that you're tired, to read that body cue as tired, and to then give yourself full permission to then sleep and not make it something that you fight or that you have other work to do or that you can't sleep until your whole checklist is done. When you experience sleepiness and your body does that, you no longer feel guilty about that experience. You say that this is important. This is a cue that I'm hungry, right? Like it's a cue that I need water. It's a cue that you need to sleep.
It's 10:45 on a Sunday night and I should be sleeping, but I'm not. I find it really, really difficult to go to bed at what I would say is an adult time or responsible time, given that my kids wake up between 6 and 7. And I find that I sort of resist sleep because it's only after my kids are in bed that I truly have time that feels like it's mine.
My kids are 5 and 3 now. And I find that every time their sleep evens out and I can count on being able to get sleep, that's when I stay up late and ruin it for myself. I've had an eye twitch for about 2 weeks now because I'm not getting enough sleep. And I can't seem to take advantage of the sleep when I do have the opportunity to.
Yeah, you need time off for yourself while you're awake. Lauren says that's okay. Just set boundaries around that time. Just as you should set boundaries around your sleep, too.
So absolutely do things that make you feel good so that you're not trying to do 5 things at night that make you feel good. Tonight, I'm going to do this thing that makes me feel good. And then tomorrow, I'll try to do this other thing that makes me feel good. But some of that requires a little bit of an intentionality to say no, sleep is important to me. I know that I'm a better parent when I'm well slept. I know that I'm a better friend when I'm well slept. So I want to do things that fulfill me, that feel good. I want to read this book that I really care about. I want to watch that Netflix show that's so funny and I love and it's hilarious. Do that thing. And then also make sure that, hey, I can prioritize my sleep in that context.
And, sometimes I fall asleep just fine. And it's not our kids waking us up. We just often wake up with thoughts and our minds become active. And sometimes it's why can't I just sleep? This is my time.
Right. This is what I usually do. I'll say this. I try to ensure that my bedroom and where I sleep is a haven that is just for sleep and other activities that should happen in my bed. And so if I wake up in the middle of the night and I'm having those intrusive thoughts, I'm having a hard time just sleeping, I don't want to associate my bed with that. I want my bed to be the place that my body and my mind feel safe in. So I actually get up and I go do something else. So I might go sit on my couch and just rest for a little bit. I might lay there until I start to feel sleepy again, and then I'll go back to bed. I often do things like dishes, really kind of mundane activities that won't wake me up or make me feel super alert and very low light. I don't turn the light on usually. I have little night lights plugged in all around my house. And so I do something like that where I can just, wash a couple of dishes and then start to feel tired again. Sometimes, especially if it's a particular thing, I forgot to do this thing. And I wake up in the middle of the night and I go do the thing. I just go do the thing that woke me up. And if I take that thing off of my mind, all of a sudden my body's like, okay, I can wind down and go back to sleep again. And so I suggest some version of that that works for you. Making sure that your bed is really where you sleep or really where you feel safe and not the place where you also work out all your stress. Work that out on the couch. Don't work that out in the bed while you're trying to sleep.
So we need to do what we can, what's in our control, even in small ways to get sleep. As Lauren says, sometimes that means giving ourselves permission to get rest when we need it, to ask for help too, to find co-conspirators, as she puts it, to make a situation better. And perhaps the important thing is to be able to recognize that you need to make the situation better, even if it feels really hard to do.
This recording is for the sleep deprivation episode. Hi, my name is Iris, and I'm from Idaho.
We want to share one more listener story. Iris has a daughter who's 5 now, but early on, Iris says she didn't know how to deal with her baby's constant crying at night. And her attempts to cope with the sleep deprivation triggered a downhill slide until she realized she really wasn't okay.
As soon as the sun would go down, she would start screaming. By the time she was a year old, I was getting up as many as 4 times a night nursing her. And it got to a point where I was so exhausted that I was crying and constantly in a daze. Even when she would end up sleeping through the night, I would not because I was so trained to wake up. I was nursing, pumping, commuting, working. Once I weaned her, I started drinking more. First, it would be a couple cocktails at night. And then when I would work from home, I might start drinking in the afternoon. And my husband and I had always used some drugs casually, you know. But at some point, cocaine was introduced into the mix. And boy, that was just what I needed for sleep deprivation. An upper during the day and some drinks at night. And I thought I was doing fine. It spiraled over a course of 9 months to me being severely depressed, addicted to both drugs and alcohol, and really unable to take care of myself in any healthy way. I think sleep deprivation was a huge piece in me breaking. It all came to a head, and in 2020, I got sober from both drugs and alcohol. That saved my life. It also saved my relationship with my daughter. Unfortunately, my marriage ended, but ultimately, I think that's better for all of us. I've been sober 2 years now. It was a living hell, and I am so thankful for sobriety and so thankful for sleep. I guard my sleep now. I don't use screens before bed. I don't drink caffeine in the afternoon. I try to get regular exercise. My relationship with my daughter is amazing. We both are so much more stable. I understand her. I see her. I understand my role as a parent. If I ever have another child, I know that I will set up my life in a way that allows me to get the sleep I need and the rest I need because I can't take that risk again. Thank you for your podcast.
Thank you, Iris, and all of you who've shared with us. Admitting how hard it is to be sleep deprived and to talk openly about how it affects our lives and sense of selves isn't easy. It means some of our darkest parenting moments are exposed, but it also exposes what we need to feel supported as parents. We don't just have to tough it out on our own. The more we talk about these moments, the more we can create or demand the conditions we need for a good night's sleep. Childproof is produced by Pallas Shaw, Marissa Schneiderman, Stacia Brown, and Will Coley. Our managing producer is Kimmy Regler, and our executive producer is Jen Poyon. Scoring and mixing by Joe Tisdall of Ultraviolet Audio. Carolyn Pennypacker Riggs wrote our theme. Connor Donahue is our manager of technical operations. You can now follow us on Twitter. We're at ChildproofPod. Come say hi. Childproof is a production of 10% Happier. If you like our show, please consider giving us a 5-star rating and review. Episodes of Childproof are available free wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to hear new episodes 1 week early, you can download Amazon Music. Or if you want to hear new episodes early and ad-free, you can subscribe to Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts or the Wondery app. Please support our show by filling out a survey at wondery.com/survey.